Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen, or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hi, and welcome to Mad Scientist Exposed, and thank you for tuning in again this week. And since the topic of the day seems to be the Paris Accords, they're able to not discuss what's going on in Marrakesh right now, which is more UN climate agenda stuff going on. And, you know, it's not all that, you know, friendly to, I'm sure, to the U.S. elections, because Trump has said that he's going to untangle us from the world climate agenda so that we're free to work on our own issues, you know, the energy and pollution and choosing our own energy types and clean coal and all that. There's actually two UN conferences going on right now, one in Marrakesh and one in Delhi. And the one in Delhi is flying under the radar. It's about tobacco control. They want to decide whether you smoke or not. And certainly the U.S. has dealt with that issue with posting warning signs on tobacco packages. But still, the U.N. wants to get their finger in it, and most likely they want to tax it. And, you know, the whole thing about the climate change, nothing has proven that mankind is actually the major cause of climate change. Climate has been changing for millennia, and that you can see that through the tree rings, and you can see that in the digging of the, you know, geology and down through the layers. You can go to the Grand Canyon and look at all the different layers of all the different events in history that affected the climate, you know, the volcanic ash and the seabeds and all kinds of things, just layer after layer after layer over millions of years. So there was an interesting show, John Stossel, I think he's Fox News. He used to be ABC, so I'm a little confused on that. But, I saw the YouTube video, and that was real recent. That was like just a couple of days ago. Let's see, today's the 15th, and that video is dated the 13th. So it was real recent. And his subject was climate change and global greening. And he had on three scientists, and just the attitudes of the scientists was astoundingly different. The one that was all for blaming humanity and political agenda, he was clearly severely arrogant. It was just kind of funny. The first guy that he had on was Roy Spencer, who's a climatologist at the University of Alabama, and he says that not all climate change is caused by mankind, and he says we actually have no idea how much or how little effect we actually have, and he doesn't disagree with the fact that the climate is changing. He disagrees with attaching political agendas and attaching fault when we don't really have the science behind attaching fault, and he doesn't agree with all these political impositions on the poor, such as making them use expensive energy in wind over coal or fossil fuels. The next guy. Now, the reason that couldn't have two scientists on at once is that the next guy, this Gavin Schmidt, who's a NASA scientist from the Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York City, he refused to appear on the set with another scientist. He says, I'm not going to make TV for you, you know, interesting TV for you by having a debate. I'm not going to debate this. You know, if you want to interview me, fine, but I'm not going to do a debate. And, you know, on that part, I kind of agree with them, because Fox News has a bad habit of setting up catfights. They'll have, you know, three insets or people sitting at a table, and the moderators, you know, sitting in the middle or on the side, and, excuse me, they'll get one talking, and then the other will talk over them, and the moderator will talk over both of them, and it just ends up really, really bad, and you never learn anything from watching these catfights. And that seems to be the style of TV that Fox News likes, and so I've kind of stopped watching them. So this guy actually did John Stossel a favor, but it looked very artificial and contrived because he has the first guy on with an empty chair. He had Roy Spencer on with an empty chair, and he gave his position, part of his position, and then he asked him to leave. John Stossel asked him to leave, and he brought in the other scientist. The other scientist had quite a long say about his agenda, and yeah, we certainly know it's mankind because we, you know, just look at how much fossil fuels we've been burning over the last 150 years, and of course it's us, and you know, I'm not even convinced that the climate is going in the warming direction. A lot, there's been some headlines on Drudge this week about it going in the cooling direction, and certainly right now we've got an extra low sunspot cycle, and that tends to steer towards global cooling. The more sunspots, the hotter the climate is, and the fewer sunspots, the cooler the climate is. It's not that the heat is coming from the sun. Where is it coming? It's coming from varying amounts of solar wind and all that, and it's all interconnected. But certainly the solar cycles have affected it. There was the what's called the Maunder minimum in the 1700s that caused such a severe climate cooling in Europe specifically that wheat wouldn't grow. The wheat crops kept failing and failing and failing. But around that time or slightly before, you know, the potato was brought back from the New World. And so the Irish learned to eat the potato. The Polish learned to eat the potato. The Germans learned to eat the potato. I guess Italy was far enough south that they still had their wheat crops. But the French, they refused. They said, no, we're not giving up our baguettes. And so they refused to grow potatoes. They considered them beneath them. And so they ended up starving year after year. And there's some folks who attribute that to the rioting that ultimately became the French Revolution and the rioting that followed. And because people were starving and going out of their minds. So anyway, so this guy, Gavin Schmidt, he says it's all about it's all man-made, all human, and we have to get a handle on it and get control of it. And all this, and Stossel suggested, well, maybe warming is better. And he says that, more people die of the cold than die of the heat. Well, I live in Arizona, and a lot of the immigrants coming over the border who are tricked into crossing the border on foot by these predatory human traffickers called coyotes, hundreds of them die in the desert every year, and it doesn't make the mainstream news because we all know the mainstream media has their agenda, and it was anti-Trump and it was pro-immigration, just letting them in. No thought to the consequence of the lives that are destroyed, the villages that are emptied out of their children as we have this flotilla of children coming across the border, and I consider that genocide of these Mexican villages, but we don't even hear that very much on the alt-right, that, you know, as these people are coming into the U.S., the devastation, it leaves behind all these missing people. So anyway, so the next guest that Stossel had on was this guy, Matt Ridley. He's a scientific journalist, but he didn't say what journal he writes for. I guess I'll have to Google him up. And his position is that the more CO2 there is, it's definitely better because it causes plants to grow faster. And he presents a map of a satellite picture of what he called the greening of the earth. He says 20% has grown greener over the last few years, while only 3% has gotten browner. And as the earth gets greener, then, it's just more pleasant. Yes, I live in the desert, and the desert's beautiful. But when you have such dry air, the temperature swings on just a daily basis are close to 40 degrees, and it makes it hard to grow a garden. You know, even if you get the heat-hardy plants versus the frost-hardy plants in the wintertime because we don't have snow, at least not much, it just seems that the temperature swings beat up the plants. It's just kind of hard on them. So I'm going to, this winter, I'm going to be doing these little vinyl greenhouses. And I'll see what kind of little spinaches and lettuces and things I get up out of the ground. So actually, it won't be ground; it'll be containers. But you know, that's just my style here. But it was an interesting conversation, and something that I thought was interesting is this Gavin Schmidt, the guy who exhibited extreme arrogance, He had a British accent, but I don't know what his history is. And this guy, Matt Ridley, he had a British accent too, and he even had the London city skyline behind him. And since I don't know what time of day it was, if it was an actual window or a green screen or what it was, but you know, it was pretty. And nowadays, I remember back to Mary Poppins and the song. Well, the song's dancing on the rooftops of London and stuff, and this deep red brown sunset and how beautiful it was, and Bert singing how beautiful it is. And nowadays you wouldn't make a movie like that, PC, to have a movie of smokestacks and a deep red sunset and with the brown laying over it. And, you know, you wouldn't call that beautiful because obviously it's very smoggy or, you know, you don't want to breathe that kind of smoke. And I guess that's related to this, the UN conference going on. I saw some interesting videos. One of the women from, actually, she's at the Delhi conference. And the scene opens with a picture of smog in Delhi, India. And it is very severe and nothing like you see in U.S. cities. Even, you know, when you complain about the smog in Los Angeles and when you're driving into Phoenix, you see this just a brown cloud hanging over Phoenix. And, you know, and I see it when I drive back and forth between Tucson and Phoenix. There's lesser of a brown cloud over Tucson, because Tucson's major pollution is the automobile, and certainly that's true for Phoenix too. I mean, yes, there's anytime there's a breeze, you get dust kicked up, and you know, sometimes these giant dust clouds envelope Phoenix. They don't. I mean, it's pretty rare in Tucson. It does happen, but then they make the front page of Drudge or whatever, these giant clouds over Phoenix. But that's dust that's left on untilled farms between Tucson and Phoenix. There's quite a lot of vast desert, and dust is a problem, and so it does blow up. Anyway, this UN conference going on right now, they're very tight-lipped about, you know, what's going on in the conference. And, you know, there's the rebel media. And just, that's a news outlet that I've kind of grown to like. If they're Canadian, they're on the conservative side, which is very hard to do in Canada. They, you know, it's almost outlawed. But, you know, they just give a perspective. They look at the U.S. from outside the U.S., and that kind of helps me see how things are going. And they've got takes on the Trump election, and they've got takes on the anti-Trump rioters, and they certainly know that they're, you know, paid agitators in the middle of them, and how silly it is. These people are protesting, you know, they like to say love Trump's hate, but then quite a few of them will admit in the microphone that it'd be okay with them if somebody assassinated Trump, which is, you know, where's the love in that? You know, the man isn't even in office. You know, people forget, you know, they keep calling him the Hitler of the U.S. And you know what? He's not. Hitler was not elected. If you look up the history of Germany, Hitler didn't get where he got by being elected. He got where he got predators, and kind of much the same kind of thing that Hillary did. You know, there's this whole stream of bodies in the Clintons' history of people that got in their way, and all of a sudden they conveniently were suicided, or the term now is arkansided. And she thought she was going to just walk away with this election. In fact, she thought she was going to steal it. And you know, there's lots of documentation on that kind of thing going on Infowars.com and Black Box Voting, I think is another one.com. And there's several articles. And you can just Google up and find a whole slew of articles that 3 million illegal aliens voted in the U.S. election. And so if you figure that in to the equations, Trump won in a landslide. You don't let anybody tell you that, oh, Hillary won the popular vote. She didn't. She absolutely did not. Anyway, this global climate agenda is going on right now, and certainly it's a political agenda. If you go to their website, and I have a link to it from my website, madscientists.exposed. I have a link over to this Marrakesh. It's called COP22. I'm not sure what those letters or numbers stand for, but I guess that's the agenda for 2022 would be my guess. But then there's a second logo CMP12, so I don't know what that is. But they have on their front page there, they've got headlines. And the first headline is, a year after the Paris climate deal, most vulnerable are still not getting financial support they need. So that sounds like it's a distribution, redistribution of wealth kind of thing. Vulnerable versus non-vulnerable, who are those? So if I click on that, we can see what it says. And this, the URL for this is COP22-morocco.com. I guess Marrakesh is in Morocco. It is. Anyway, here's it. A year after the Paris climate deal, most vulnerable are still not getting financial support they need. The amount of net financial assistance going to help developing countries fight climate change has been miscounted by tens of billions of dollars, according to a new Oxfam report released on the eve of the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Morocco. In the Climate Finance Shadow Report 2016, Oxfam shows that of the $41 billion per year that rich countries reported, the net worth specifying specifically targeting climate action was just $11 to $21 billion. Of that, just $4 to $8 billion was earmarked to help poor countries adapt to the impacts of climate change, far short of what's needed. Well, I'm not sure what that means. I mean, if they're not running factories spewing into the air, but we want them to build factories, does that mean we need to be supplying them with the technology to, say, make their coal clean coal? And anyway, it goes on. Climate change is already hitting people. Droughts have killed crops. Sea level rise has destroyed homes. These kinds of climate shocks, combined with the super El Nino, have left around 60 million facing hunger this year alone. The people most vulnerable to these effects are the least responsible for causing climate change. And they need help to adapt to their new reality, but are still not getting it at the scale needed, said Isabel Chrysler, Oxfam International's climate change expert. Well, what help do we want to do? If their houses are flooding, are we to build them new houses? They're not saying what they need. Oxfam's count also shows that just $8.7 billion of overall climate finance is going towards the least developed countries, the group of 48 of the world's poorest countries who are particularly vulnerable to climate change and lack the resources to handle its impact. Because the rules and reporting guidelines for what counts as climate finance are limited and poorly financed, Oxfam's tally shows a very different picture from what rich countries have reported in the past. Developing countries are in danger of losing out sorely needed financial support that they're legally owed under the UN Climate Change Convention. Okay, now that's the one that sounds like Obama signed, but U.S. Congress has not ratified. So, actually, I don't think that we're legally obligated at this point. Anyway, it goes on, the fast ratification of the Paris Agreement shows world leaders understand the need for urgency. They were running like heck trying to force that on Trump. You know, before, I remember this a couple weeks ago, you know, the Paris Accord, they ran through and all their countries signed it in order to close off any negotiation so that they would try to, they saw the handwriting on the wall or at least the possibility for Trump's election, and they're trying to tie his hands. And that man will not be tied. I was so impressed with him at the beginning of his campaign. He was talking things I'd never heard of in my life. I'd never heard NAFTA criticized. I'd never heard of building a wall, and just ideas that were just like, wow, just bursting like fireworks. Like, wow, that's a free man. He will not be tied to these people's machinations. So anyway, we cannot afford to slacken the pace now. The Marrakesh summit, I'm reading in this, the fast ratification. We cannot afford to slacken the pace now. The Marrakesh summit must guarantee that the people on the front lines of the climate crisis get the support they need and are entitled to, said Chrysler. Oxfam calls on donor countries and other major players at the conference in Marrakesh to step up their efforts to increase adaptation finance particularly for the least developed countries, work with developing countries' governments to make funds more easily accessible to those that need it most, and make progress in tracking where the money is going with improved accounting and reporting. Now, this is so vague. Like, what do they need the help with? Do they need it for rebuilding houses that get burned in fires or flooded out in rising tides that, by some measurements, are actually not happening? Do they need retrofitting their factories that aren't built yet? What do they need the help with? Do they need air conditioners that, because it's getting hotter where they live? Oh, wait, we have to remember that Obama told the African people they should not have air conditioners or cars. You know, don't make the same mistakes as the West. Don't get air conditioners or cars. Well, I don't know about certain parts of Africa near the Sahara, but I know, at least in Arizona, the U.S., life is deadly without air conditioning. You cannot have a car that doesn't have air conditioning. I had a car that didn't have air conditioning one summer in Arizona, and to get from point A to point B without passing out in traffic, I had this spray bottle, and I barely survived. I would get where I was going without passing out in traffic, but it was not a good situation. And if we're going to impose this on all of Africa, that means that we're going to tie up all their infrastructure. We're not going to let them have cars and roads or anything else. And that's pretty disgusting to have that kind of agenda and impose that on poor people when lifting them up out of poverty means improving the quality of their lives. So anyway, that's the first article on that, and there are a bunch more articles on that. The next article is United Against Climate Change. The next one after that is COP22 sets the stage for Africa to mobilize support for adaptation plans. I don't know what that means. Climate change in African cities, solutions and partnerships for action, event date 1. Australia ratifies Paris Climate Agreement despite Trump concerns. Well, Trump didn't run for office in Australia. Australia, I mean, that's up to Australia what Australia wants to do. We got nothing to do with that. Oh, so here Trump gets another headline. Trump moving to quit Paris Climate Agreement quickly. And I should take a look at that. I'm so glad they're so worried about it. I remember back, I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, and I remember how buses and traffic used to smell. And now we've got all these catalytic converters in our cars, and traffic doesn't smell like it used to smell. Smog, yes, we have smog, but it actually is not as horrible as it once was. And even though our population is larger, our cities are larger. And I've had to explain that to my kids. They hear this stuff at school that, Republicans and older generation, and they just want dirty air and dirty water. I'm like, are you crazy? We invented Earth Day. I remember Earth Day and bringing in the catalytic converters. And you don't remember how it was. I remember how it was. And things are so much better now. You got to give us some credit to the older generation and the people who think, just want to make America great. It was kind of funny when in the late 80s, after we'd been with catalytic converters for, I think, like 10 years or so in the U.S., and the conversion to unleaded gas. Boy, I remember leaded gas. It stunk. But I visited Calgary and Banff and Jasper of the Canadian Rockies. And it's beautiful, beautiful photography. But when you're settled in between in a mountain valley, between mountains like that, and the buses and the tour buses and all is coming through spewing their smog, it was real obvious. I could smell they were still using leaded gas. And I had been without that smell for about 10 years at that point, and it was awful. It was just awful. Now, I'm sure Canada's come around since, and now, I'm talking about the late 80s, but, we advanced countries compared to these developing countries need to get some credit for the improvements that we've already done. And anyway, so here's Trump moving to quit Paris climate quickly. Anyway, Morocco. Donald Trump is seeking quick ways of withdrawing from a global agreement to limit climate change, a source on his transition team said, defying widening international backing for the plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Well, that's their business. Well, you know, we'll do it at our own pace. Why should we be slugging along, raising up other countries before we raise up our own? Anyway, since the U.S. president-elect was chosen, they don't say elected, huh? Governments ranging from China to small island states have reaffirmed support for the 2015 Paris Agreement, a 200-nation climate talks running until November 18th in Marrakesh, Morocco. So that's 3 more days from now. Trump, who has called global warming a hoax and has promised to quit the Paris Agreement, was considering ways to bypass the theoretical 4-year procedure for leaving the accord, according to the source, who works on Trump's transition team for international energy and climate policy. It was reckless for the Paris Agreement to enter into force before the election. On Tuesday, the source told Reuters, speaking on condition of anonymity. The Paris Agreement won enough backing for entry into force on November 4th. Scared to death that we might actually have better ideas than they do. Alternatives were to send a letter withdrawing from a 1992 convention that is the parent treaty of the Paris Agreement, voiding U.S. involvement in a year's time, or to issue a presidential order simply deleting the U.S. signature from the Paris Accord, he said. Many nations have expressed hopes that the United States will stay. Host Morocco said the agreement that seeks to phase out greenhouse gases on the second half of the century was strong enough to have survived a pullout. Another quote, if one party decides to withdraw, it doesn't call the agreement into question, Foreign Minister Salahuddin Mazour told the news conference. The agreement was reached by almost 200 nations in December and as of Saturday has been formally ratified by 109, representing 76% of greenhouse gas emissions, including the United States with 18%. The accord seeks to limit rising temperatures that have been linked to increasing economic damage from desertification. Well, what does that mean? Extinctions of animals and plants, heat waves, floods, and rising sea levels. Oh, you know what? I think they misspelled it. I think they were trying to write desertification. They have a C where they need an S, and that changes the whole meaning of the sentence. You don't even know what decertification means. They're certified, now they're not certified, or they weren't deserts and now they are. Now, according to that Stossel thing, we see that the earth is greening, and now very few areas are, much smaller areas are browning. So, and of course, the Sahara is completely blanked out on that. The Brazilian rainforest, boy, they're getting greener and greener and greener, but the Sahara, there's no data on that. There's no data on the Middle East. You know, these are people that live in deserts, and, you know, I think if they just had trees, they'd all be happier. So, anyway, UN Climate Chief Patricia Espinosa declined to comment on the Trump source's remarks to Reuters. The Paris Agreement carries an enormous amount of weight and credibility, she told a news conference. She said the United Nations hoped for a strong and constructive relationship with Trump. You know, why don't they call him President-elect Trump or President Trump? And now I see why they rushed into this Paris signature so early on, several months ago. And it wasn't, I mean, at the time, Donald Trump hadn't even won the primaries. It wasn't so much that they were trying to forestall a Trump win. They were trying to get ahead of his rhetoric because, you know, he said, hey, NAFTA's obsolete and needs to be renegotiated. Boom, NAFTA goes and makes new changes right away without Trump even being elected. You know, he said, oh, well, they're not taking into account the new ISIS and terrorism from the Middle East. And boom, they run and they change their organization to take into account the terrorism in and from the Middle East. And, you know, the way, just his campaign, the way he opened people's minds, even if he hadn't been elected, it's game over for these self-important globalists telling you and legislating science. So, you know, they were worried about people actually listening to him and changing what they were thinking about climate science and making it more open-ended than they wanted it to be. And so this wasn't about so much about trying to tie America's hands. That was about tying other people's hands, non-American countries' hands, before they heard just a little too much of Trump's clear thinking. So I think it's about time I need to take a commercial break here. And when we come back, I'll take some calls The number to call in is 319-527-6208, 319-527-6208, and press 1 if you'd like to join the conversation, or if you just want to listen on air, then just dial in. So anyway, I'll be back in a minute.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer Radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
So again, give us a call and join the conversation. The number is 319-527-6208, 319-527-6208, and you can just listen to the show if you want on that number, or you can dial 1 and join the conversation. And our favorite caller has just called in again here. Hi, Ed. I recognize your number.
That's me.
Are you there?
That's
you.
Great.
How are you doing?
Sure am.
You got thoughts
good,
on this, huh?
Good. I am finding that I am definitely a climate change skeptic. But you know, up until, what would you say, 5 or 10 years ago, it was always called global warming. They always called it global warming. You almost never heard climate change. Now that I think some of the global warming has been kind of called out into question, now they've changed it over to calling it climate change. But here's one thing I wanted to tell you that I've seen just recently. There's a website called Climate Skeptic. It's climate-skeptic.com. And one of the pages that he has is on temperature measurement, manual adjustments in the temperature record. Now, I did not know this. I did not know that that scientists in the last 15 or 20 years have gone, including NOAA, including N-O-A-A, have made adjustments to raw temperature data from the past. From decades in the past, and evidently they adjusted it up to reflect that the global warming. For example, there's a chart here that I'm looking at that shows a place called Puerto Casado, 22 degrees south, 57 degrees west. Gosh knows where that is. That sounds like it might be somewhere in Melanesia or Australia or something like that. Anyway. There's spikes and troughs going across from 1950 to 2012 or so, and the overall thing has been slightly down. The temperature has been very slightly down. So after manual adjustments were made to this chart, it steeply shows the climate, the temperature going up. Let me see what its increments of annual mean temperature. Let's see. I would say that it looks like before they made the adjustments that the temperature changed from about maybe 25.5 Celsius to about 24.5 Celsius. In other words, 1 degree down. But after they made their manual adjustments, the temperature seems to have gone from about 23 degrees Celsius to 25. They have changed it from going down 1 degree to going up 2 degrees, and I think
they're changing
that's,
the slope of the data. You know,
There's graphs of it.
Full of wonderful people. I used to, I worked there many years ago, but you know, apparently they're not immune to politics. And on that John Stossel show that I referenced this morning, one of the scientists, I think it was the first one, but no, it was the last one, made a reference to unless you have a crisis you're trying to solve, then you don't get the funding. So they have to make it look like a crisis, whether it is or not, in order to get the funding. Now, when I was there before, people were in such a panic. I had grown up with this thought of the nuclear freeze. We can't have nuclear war because, you know, we'll have the nuclear winter, you know, a perpetual nuclear winter. Mm-hmm. And that was what they were selling us at the time, you know, because there'll be all this dust in the air and nuclear dust, and it'll shade the earth, and, you know, all the crops will fail and all that stuff. And who knows? But anyway, it went from global freezing to global cooling. And so that's when I realized that something was wrong. that's too bad about adjusting
the
data. It's so disgusting.
Suzanne,
I'm sorry?
One way to get around global warming would be to have a nuclear winter, you know? I'm kidding.
But, you know, is that true? Or are you just going to have everything burn up in one big nuclear blast? Nobody wants nuclear war, and so that's why that's one of the reasons I'm so pleased with the Trump win, is because he's the one that did not want nuclear war, and Hillary did. If you go back over Putin's statements over the last year, he's like, my God, U.S. media, look what's happening, you know, stop escalating this, you know, stuff with Russia, you know, that we don't want war, and now he seems to have taken a deep breath of relief. that Trump was elected. We're not going to have a nuclear war over the next 4 years, that's for sure. So
here's a little bit about
that's
NOAA.
A wonderful site. I need to put a link to that. I'll put a link to that on the page here.
This he has an underscored thing that goes to a post from 7 years ago discussing these adjustments. But note that the adjustments he cannot find a similar chart anymore from NOAA discussing the adjustments. So NOAA doesn't want to talk about the adjustments that they made. These were evidently back around 2000 is when they started, the year 2000. They suddenly started, changing historical temperature charts. Let me read this. It says the NOAA has made adjustments to U.S. temperature data over the last few years that has increased the apparent warming trend. These changes in adjustment have not been well explained. In fact, they have not really been explained at all and have only been detected by skeptics who happen to archive old NOAA charts and created comparisons like the one below. Here is the before and after animation, which is pre-2000 NOAA U.S. temperature history versus post-2000. History has been cooled and modern temperatures have been warmed. Can you imagine that? History has been cooled and modern temperatures have been warmed from where they were being shown previously by the NOAA.
So there's
some definite chicanery going on there. It's just crazy.
Oh, how awful.
Yeah, there's animation. There's animated chart on this page if you go down a little bit.
I wonder what I can find at archive.org on NOAA. The Wayback Machine?
That's an idea.
That's where you can find Obama as the first birther, claiming he was born in Canada. I mean, Kenya. I'm sorry. You know, that's where you can find this kind of stuff. You know, there's wonderful stuff.
You
know,
in Canada, we
people
don't know.
In lies. Yeah, I was born in Kenya before I wasn't born in Kenya. You know.
Well, you know, he could have been in he could have been in Alberta with or Toronto with Ted Cruz's family. You know, he might have been born into that family for all we know.
Wow.
And of course, he was too young to remember. He doesn't know where he was born. He can't remember. Nobody can remember where they were born.
No, I don't think he knows. Himself, I don't think he knows, but we do know that that birth certificate is a forgery. We do know that, and I'm hoping that the Trump administration has a place for Joe Arpaio in the administration, because Joe Arpaio is the one with the stacks and stacks of evidence of Obama's forged documents. It's not just the birth certificate. It's his draft card. It's his, you know, college transcripts. And they said the more that they uncovered, you know, I've watched a few of his press conferences, and they're available online, folks, if you want to see the Joe Arpaio press conferences. They found so much information, evidence, but it went way beyond Obama. He said it was so much evidence it would take down the whole government, and that's why they didn't proceed.
Yeah.
They couldn't. It would have taken everything down. So now Toby's going to do it for him. What?
I was wondering, I don't know that much about Sheriff Joe's, papers and everything that he did on
Obama. Okay, it's off topic.
Why did it get stalled? Why did it get stalled and not
That's
end
what
up,
I'm telling
you know,
you,
more of a fuss?
Because it was so big. Well, one thing is Obama keeps pursuing him with these, this agenda about, accusing Arpaio of racism. Well, that's what Obama does. He accuses everybody of racism. In his own autobiography, Dreams from My Father, he talks about in high school how he learned to play the race card as a game, to get what you want, and shut people down right away. And it was just kind of a nasty sport. And he took it up as a teenager, and he's still doing it. And, we just see it with these riots, and the DNC paying these people to do what they're doing. Somewhere I heard a couple radio shows, because once in a while, one of Arpaio's lead investigators would come on World Net Daily or whatever, and you'd say, we've got enough, we're going to come out with a big announcement really soon, really soon, really soon, and it never happened. And finally, somebody got a hold of him, and I can't remember the guy's name. It was a nice Italian name, but, finally they admitted it would bring down the whole government, how bad it was as to the evidence that they found. And it's really, people are done waiting. It's like, we elected Trump really to go in and smash up whatever illegal is going on in the government. You know, it's totally corrupt. It's totally sucking the life out of the U.S. economy, and, sucking in, absorbing all the money to the corrupt people at the top, who are then beholden to the U.N. that's trying to suck the money out of us with these climate deals. You know, the whole point of these climate deals is to tax the U.S. to help these other countries. But the money never really gets there. I remember the oil for food scandal, where all the money that that Iraq was supposed to get for food for oil didn't go back to Iraq, and people were starving to death in Iraq. And and the UN was sucking up Iraq's money to the tune of $1 billion or more at the time. That sounded like a lot of money, and the people in Iraq were going hungry. And then we had to have this war and all that stuff. And a lot of history since the oil for food scandal, but. The UN is totally corrupt. The UN is so corrupt. And that's, the founding fathers of the U.S. realized that centralized power at the top gets corrupt. It's just the nature of power at the top. And so they decentralized it all into states' rights and states' powers. That's why we have the Electoral College, is so that we can get in there and clean out the corruption when it grows up like weeds, choking out the life of the country. And so... But there's no mechanism for that for the UN. So if we keep signing on to trade deals that become government deals, then the UN is our government, and they'll impose suffocating taxes on us under the guise of spreading the wealth to the poorer countries. But the poorer countries never get it. You get people like the Clintons, with their hand out, going in and raping Haiti after the earthquake of 2010. And then Bill Clinton puts out a statement. He's looking for donations for I don't think he is anymore, but after the recent hurricane there, Hurricane Matthew, he had the nerve to after this information came out about them raping Haiti blind after the earthquake, he's going to go do it again after Hurricane Matthew. And, you know, it was just, I think it was a cynical call. Like, hey, we're ready to start selling the influence for Hillary's inauguration. You know, once she gets in, we'll start selling influence. And, you know, we need some real investment in this country.
They have nothing to sell anymore.
Right.
They have nothing to sell anymore. People can ask for their money back, probably, you know, if they're smart.
I heard they were still campaigning to make some for the foundation.
Well, a lot of it was donations. But why would anybody do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, please need to negotiate their own deals. If they want companies to come in and help build them up into, you know, first-rate countries, first-world countries, I think each country needs to clean out its own corruption and then, you know, cut the UN totally out of the deal, you know, clean out their own corruption, like you see all these potentates, you know, running around killing people in Africa. They just need to clean it out and then make their own deals with the different companies and investments that could build them up. And, you know, here we have, if you pull up the Putin Cash on video on YouTube, that's a history of all these different deals where the Clintons will go in and into countries that I guess don't have the wherewithal to negotiate for themselves. I don't know. And they'll make contracts and that these companies come in, they suck out huge amounts of money and resources from the countries for very little return. And that's, I guess, that's what happened in Haiti. And there was an interesting thing on the Stossel climate thing. They had a photograph, and this was the last guy who was talking about the greening of gases help plants grow. And they had a photograph of the border between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. These are, you know, two opposite ends of the same island. And it was like a razor sharp line right down the middle of Haiti, and one side was deforested dirt desert, just awful, and the other side was forests and greens and all this stuff. And what was going on there, what they said is that the Dominican Republic encourages its population to use fossil fuels. Don't cut down the wood, don't burn the wood, don't use them for your cooking stoves, use fossil fuels and natural gas out of the gas, you know, use gas stoves and all this stuff, and they have tax incentives for using fossil fuels over cutting down their forests, and that has made all the difference in the world to between Dominican Republic and Haiti. When you have water, you have wealth, and when you have trees, and somebody did a study in Africa, and I don't know if I can find it again, where they had, you know, all these deforested places, and the water rushes through, takes all of, you know, the topsoil with it, and then it's gone. And you have all these poverty places. I think it was South Africa this happened. And so they started a project where they went upstream of these streams, up in the mountains and the trees, to try to anchor the soil, slow down the rushing of the water so it didn't leave so fast. And because when you have desert soil, it gets compacted like concrete and the water just runs away, you know. But if you have plants with their roots digging into the soil, then it slows down the water cycle. It keeps the water wealth with you longer so you can have your crops and have your prosperity. And that was an interesting project. When they slowed down the water cycle and kept the water in places longer, the towns along those streams prospered more. It wasn't just about water. It was about every other aspect of prosperity. And, you know, there was an interesting video on, I like to watch growingyourgreens.com. It's a YouTube channel with a guy named John Kohler, and he likes to travel and interview people. And he was down at a fruit festival in Costa Rica recently, and he visited this lady who's right within the equatorial region, and her life's goal is reforesting the rainforest down there. And they work with families. They have it so that, you know, they don't just, you know, have a law mandate that these people have to reforest. They're working with hundreds and hundreds of families that at one time were chopping down the rainforest in order to clear for farmland and burn the wood, whatever they were doing. And they've altered the economy so that planting the trees actually helps them be prosperous on their farms. And I should put a link to that too. And her big point was that by slowing down the water cycle, rather than have all the water run away and have these dry patches that then they have to irrigate their farms and all that stuff, by having the water cycle slow down, you have the rain come down, goes into the soil, into the roots, and then the trees aspirate it to the air. And I forget what that's called. Maybe is it aspiration? I think somebody told me the word. But that actually creates the clouds. And the clouds, you know, then they, you know, drift across the globe, and they, produce rain in other places. Like, we wouldn't have as much rain as we have in the world without these trees in the rainforest actually producing clouds rather than having the water run off to the ocean. And it was just a very interesting video, and I should take a look at that too. You know, and she says, yes, planting trees in other latitudes does help, but not as much as it helps to be planting the trees and reforesting the rainforest. And if you look directly across from the Brazilian rainforest, you have the Sahara Desert on the other side. And it makes me wonder what went on prehistory that possibly created the Sahara Desert. Could we reclaim it? Would there be a way to reforest the Sahara Desert? And, you know, people might be horrified. The desert is beautiful and it's a delicate ecosystem and all this kind of stuff. And and maybe that's true. I can, you know, even the Arizona desert is fragile ecosystem.
Suzanne?
But reforesting the Sahara?
Suzanne, when they had the melting ice, from left over from the last glacial period, then northern Africa was a savanna. It was broadly planted with trees and brush and bushes and everything. There was no desert there at all. It was just a perfect climate, probably, up until, you know, sometime around the start of the Egyptian empire there. And then all that was left was what was along the Nile and the Nile Delta, you know, and the inland cities across the Sahara were abandoned as they slowly turned into desert. So
like the ancient Indians in Arizona abandoned places that got really hot. So I just Googled what caused the Sahara Desert, and this is from space.com. The Sahara, and it agrees with what you're saying, the world's largest desert was once fertile grassland. The widely held belief is that the Sahara dried up due to a change in the Earth's orbit, which affects solar insulation or the amount of electromagnetic energy the Earth receives from the sun. Well, what changed the by, and how long ago was it?
Okay.
So now, when did the Sahara Desert form? When did how do they know it's a grassland? I guess from fossils. When did the Sahara form?
There are lost cities in the Sahara that occasionally turn up, you know, like the sand dunes get blown around by the monsoon winds.
So wasn't that long ago?
All of a sudden, what?
So then it was livable not that long ago. If it's only a few thousand years, that's nothing.
And there was a lake. I've forgotten the name of the lake, but there was a lake that must have been, about the size of Lake Mead or Lake Tahoe or something like that, about, 50 miles west of the Nile, and it was in kind of a basin. And the lake was there throughout ancient, Egyptian times, and then it slowly started, silting up, and it used to be connected at one point to the Nile through a canal. Canals were dug anciently, to the Nile and stuff, and there were lots of towns along the lake, and those all dried up too. Maybe there's a little bit left, but not much. It's all gone into the desert.
I Googled, when did the Sahara Desert form? And it says, this is from sci-news.com. A series of climate simulations co-led by Dr. Camille Cantut of the Birkenes Center for Climate Research in Bergen, Norway, suggests that the desertification, spelled with an S, of Sahara started about 7 million years ago, at least 4 million years earlier than previously thought. Camel caravan crosses. Oh, that's a photograph. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't anything we did.
Oh, no, it's a long
now
time
here's LifeScience.com. So now this says, now LifeScience says, .com says, Sahara went from green to desert in a flash. Well, maybe not. If the other research says it had happened over 7 million years.
7 million years? No, I don't believe it.
Well, the first one
I
agree with you.
Yeah.
The first one said at least 4 million years earlier than previously thought. Even 3 million years ago, I don't think they're even sure exactly when mankind started. I mean, they can't blame this on mankind. It's too old, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey,
so this other one says,
hey, Suzanne.
What?
Okay. Well, I just found something called notrickzone.com, notrickzone.com. And the story is California sea level rise is slowing down. It ignores the modelers. The modelers are being ignored. And I saw a chart here that shows predicted rise of the sea, whatnot, along San Francisco Bay and whatever, and or along the California coast. And it's just not happening. It's just not happening the way that they predicted it would. And you know what that goes back to? It goes back to, for me, some photos that I saw on the internet. The one photo was taken in San Diego, just north of San Diego. I think it was called Pacific Beach or Mission Bay, near somewhere between there and La Jolla. There was a little grotto, a little kind of a little cove, you know, along the beach, along the sea. And one photo was 2013, and another photo had been taken at exactly the same place in 1884, or was it 1886? But anyway, it was taken at the same tide, at a high tide, both photos. They were, 130 some years apart, and there's absolutely no change in the sea level, just no change. You can see rocks, individual rocks. They're just as high above the sea in the one picture in 1884 as the next picture in 2013. And I think that's just remarkable. I think that just puts to shame. The climate change idiots, you know. They're trying to force something on people that's just not happening.
Yeah, because they're claiming the water is rising because the poles are melting. But in fact, the poles aren't melting.
Well, well something's going on. I don't know what's happening, but whatever their model is that they're using, there are several places. I think I also saw one for Australia where the sea level was exactly the same as it had been 100 years ago, you know, where they have where they've actually marked some, in some kind of piers or something where they marked where the sea level was, you know, 100 years ago, and it's still there. So.
It's still there, wow.
But
so this
what
article
can we do
in the Sahara says that the Sahara actually had a wet period. The African humid period started and ended suddenly, confirming previous studies by other groups. The sediments revealed, however, toward the humid period's end, about 6,000 years ago, the dust was about 20% of today's level, far less dusty than previous estimates. So now they're talking in scales of thousands of years instead of millions of years.
Yeah.
So I don't know what went on with the Sahara, and I'll have to look at some more charts. So I'm looking at changes in polar ice, and there's some interesting articles here. Arctic Sea Ice News and Analysis, that's nsidc.org. Climate change, vital signs of the planet. Climate change impact on sea ice decline. Why is Antarctica's sea ice growing while Arctic melts? That sounds like something from underneath it. Well, one thing is Antarctica is a continent. And if it's got, you know, sea ice is surrounding the continent, it's not actually flowing in the water. And you know, when I was a kid, I always knew snow melted faster if you put water on it, of course. I guess it depends if, but then overnight it would freeze hard as a rock. So maybe that's such a good observation. So anyway, so it looks like there's disagreement as to what the poles are actually doing. Is that article losing or gaining ice? Skeptical science.
Is much more powerful than the Arctic when it comes to global temperatures. Antarctica is this huge piece of ice, basically very, very thick, miles deep, you know? Nothing like it in the northern.
Yes, but it's land. It's land, and by definition of rainfall, Antarctica is actually a desert, kind of like Australia.
Okay. Well,
it has snow. The snow has been, the snow ice has been built up over centuries, and it blows from one place to another. So
Why should there be any rain? Why should there be any rain there? It's all in the ice.
So if there was anything, it would be snow. And I'm sure they get some snow, but not much, because it's actually a desert. So I don't know. Updated NASA data. Global warming not causing any polar. This is Forbes magazine. And as soon as it finishes loading, I can tell you the date on it. Oh, spinning. Waiting for images, waiting for ads.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want your patience is not an absence of action. Rather, it is timing. It waits on the right time to act. Well, where can I hit skip? I don't like watching quotes today. Oh, it gives me a countdown there. Continue to article. I don't want to click again. I just wanted to go to the article.
Mm-hmm. It's stalling you, huh? You can't get to the article. When it comes to rising sea levels, Coronado is treading water. Do you know Coronado? It's on the tip of a peninsula that's of San Diego Bay. It has that, what is that magnificent hotel out there? A very famous hotel that I can't remember the name of. Coronado City leadership acknowledges it could be facing dire circumstances, but it acknowledges so far it has taken no steps to plan for outcome. So this is a kind of like a dire warning from July 5th, 2016 about coastal cities like Coronado and Imperial Beach and others in the San Diego area that are not doing a thing about climate rise, even though as oceans rise, beaches may erode, tides will creep in, and storms will cause worse floods. It says the Navy has made some preparations of its own for climate change. There's a big Navy base there. So the Navy has already, I don't know whose idea that was, made preparations for climate change. You'd think they could probably do something more useful. But the cities around there have not. So. But it's a scare thing. It quotes a local climatologist who's an activist who's trying to get the cities to prepare, for being underwater, I guess. But as I say, it doesn't look like it's happening down there at all. I'd like to see what their statistics are.
I don't think so, So this Forbes article finally loaded, if you want to hear part of it. It says, this article is only a year and a half old, May 19, 2015. Updated NASA data. Global warming is not causing any polar ice retreat. And this is author James Taylor. He says, I am president of the Spark of Freedom Foundation. That's his byline. Updated data from NASA satellite instruments reveal the Earth's polar ice caps have not receded at all since the satellite instruments began measuring the ice caps in 1979. I told you off air, that I if you just sit outside at night in a lawn chair and watch the sky, you can see polar orbiting satellites. I mean, it's a polar orbit. Mm. They go round and round, North Pole to South Pole and up again, and that way they can map the whole Earth. Anyway, since the end of 2012, moreover, total polar ice extent has largely remained above the post-1979 average. The updated data contradict one of the most frequently asserted global warming claims, that global warming is causing the polar ice caps to recede. The timing of the 1979 NASA satellite instrument launch could not have been better for global warming alarmists. The late 1970s marked the end of a 30-year cooling trend. Well, now we know that NOAA data was cooked. Anyway, as a result, the polar ice caps were quite likely more extensive than they had been since at least the 1920s. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, this abnormally extensive 1979 polar ice extent would appear to be the quote-unquote normal baseline when comparing post-1979 polar ice extent. Updated NASA satellite data, and he's got a link to that, UIUC.edu, show the polar ice caps remained at approximately the 1979 extent until the middle of the last decade, which would be the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning in 2005, however, polar ice modestly receded for several years. By 2012, polar ice had receded by approximately 10% from the 1979 measurements. Total polar ice area, factoring in both sea and land ice, had receded by much less than 10%, but alarmists focused on the sea ice loss as proof. Quote-unquote, of a global warming crisis.
Were there polar bears treading water? Were there Eskimos treading water? I mean,
you know what?
I seem to think that there were. There are pictures of it.
polar bears swim to fish. So if you have pictures of polar bears kind of like falling off the edge of ice, they're going fishing. There's stories about how they zoomed in really close, like they did on all the Trump rallies, zoomed in really close on Trump's face. You couldn't see the massive size of the crowds. They zoomed in really close on the polar bears that were kind of like falling off the edge of the ice because it was supposedly shrinking and not showing you the actual extent of the ice that polar bear owned. Anyway, it says a 10% decline in polar ice is not very remarkable, especially considering the 1979 baseline was abnormally high anyway. Regardless, global warming activists and a compliant news media frequently and vociferously claim the modest polar ice cap retreat was a sign of impending catastrophe. Al Gore even predicted the Arctic ice cap would completely disappear by 2014. Well, that didn't happen. In late 2012, however, polar ice dramatically rebounded and quickly surpassed the post-1979 average. Ever since, polar ice cap has been at a greater average extent than the post-1979.
Suzanne?
Yeah?
The only thing that completely disappeared by 2014 was Al Gore.
Oh, yeah, John Stossel said he's another one that won't debate. He won't participate in any debates.
They're very insecure.
He's got something to sell, and he makes a lot of money selling it and flying his carbon-spewing jets all around. So now in May 2015, they did this article. The updated NASA data show polar ice is approximately 5% above the post-1979 average. And this ends here. During the modest decline in 2005 through 2012, the media present. Oh, it doesn't end there. It goes to the second page. Well, anyway, it's all agenda, political agenda.
Suzanne, I saw a map just yesterday of Europe and part of Russia out to Siberia. And the Siberian part, the eastern part of Russia, is like 40 or 50 degrees cooler than usual for this time of year. It's that whole area is at least 10 degrees colder than usual this time of year. So there could be some real cooling
some polar
trends
air
going
traveling
on.
I mean,
yeah. And they said it would take them at least a month. It would take at least a month to 2 months. But that's definitely moving in our direction. So it's going to go over, you know, Alaska and Canada and come down into the United States. So the northern tier is going to be sub-zero, freezing.
You know, I tend to not believe anybody anymore. Maybe yes.
Not even me.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the media. You know, yes, they might be experiencing polar temperatures in Siberia, but you kind of expect that. At least I do.
Well, it's supposed to be cold in Siberia, right?
Yeah. See, now
that's
that we have
the
all these
so inhospitable.
Now that we have all these all these satellite data, and I like to watch BP Earth Watch on YouTube. He's got all these satellite data watching all these things change on the Earth and the earthquakes and the solar cycles and the solar wind and all that stuff. But now that we have all this data, the idea is that now we need to control it. We don't need to control it. It just naturally fluctuates anyway. You know, it's like trying to control breathing. You know, you don't always take the same depth of a breath that you took before. And if you don't think of the Earth as a living thing, it's certainly full of living things. And,
it's not a mechanistic,
robotic thing. Huh?
You don't think he meant control the flow of the data, like control how the
data.
No, you know,
that's not what I
mean.
I didn't mean specific people. I meant we've got this mentality. Now that we can see all this data, now that the urges to just general human mentality, how can we make it better? How can we control it? How can we make it better? And certainly, we see all this, HARP and some other programs that are weaponizing weather. And certainly that's, but weaponizing something that you already had is not. There's bomb making and I guess it's the same agenda. You know, once you get a science, there's an urge to both improve mankind, which is, controlling it, or then you have the other side of people weaponizing it. And I better take a quick commercial break here before we run out of time here. So let me take a break here. Sorry about that.
Hi, guys. It's me, your host, Red Gypsy, reminding you to come journey into freedom with me every Monday night at 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. This is going to be a show that's going to cover everything from metaphysics to holistics to herbs to gardening to barefooting to grounding and so much more. Dare to be different, dare to be you, and dare to learn to love yourself unconditionally. Namaste.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo. Be sure to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Justice Club on Freedomizer Radio. Grab a snack, grab a latte, grab a friend, or grab a stranger. I've been on the front lines for 25 years, and I've been labeled as the crusader for equal rights by the media many times. So join my crusade on the Justice Club at Freedomizer Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Need a reason to stay up on Thursday night? Late Night Across America with Michael and Debbie is the new show of returning veteran internet hosts Michael J. Weber and Debbie Lewis. Late Night Across America with Michael and Debbie will cover as many topics as they can in pursuit of knowledge. It's the only way to make informed decisions. It'll be worth staying up for. So join us from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. Central, every Thursday night on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
So we're back, and it made me think about this. You know, we have what you want is the decentralization of power, and that's why Americans have the Second Amendment. Is if the government gets really tyrannical, they can at least defend themselves in their own homes, in their own streets. And this whole thing about the climate agenda and the UN, you know, what are we going to do about it in the Paris Accords, and trying to tie everybody's hands and force one country to do onto another country and all this stuff. You know, the way to thwart corruption is to decentralize it all. You know, people. I think for the most part, most people want to not damage the earth. They want clean air, clean water. And as a richer country develops technologies for, you know, for producing wealth without damaging the climate, certainly that would be something worth sharing with other countries and, you know, investing in and all this stuff without the force of somebody at the top taxing you to force you to do it. And, you know, it's just seems like the right thing. You know, there is this movement in software called open source, where it's, you know, you develop the code for the benefit of everybody and you share it and you give it away for free. A lot of websites are based on WordPress, which is open source code. And, you know, the Freedomizer website, freedomizer.com website, the madscientist.expose website, I think it's Time and CNN blogs, and there's a lot of websites that use open source code, and I think it has advanced the internet much faster than it would have been if everything was all tied up in proprietary technology. And I think there just needs to be a general world movement in open source technology, and it will raise everybody out of poverty a lot faster than a corrupt UN at the top trying to force everybody's hands, trying to force all these other countries to stay in it, you know, just in case Trump gets America out of it. Or to try to force America to stay in it. It's just a way of thinking, open source technology. I wonder if that term, if there is such a website. I'm sure there is. I know there's open source. People are teaching, they're sharing open source plans for indoor hydroponics for growing your own food and stuff like that. Open source technology, here's Google, is a growing trend in GIS. But what is it? I don't know what GIS, they don't define GIS. Open source software is software in which the source code used to create the program is freely available for the public to view, edit, and redistribute. Open source software is identified by the type of license it is released under. Well, they're only talking about software, but I don't think it has to be just software. I think the technology for clean coal and all that can be shared, and best practices and things like that can be shared without being mandated. Nobody tells me what kind of software to run on myself on my website. Of course, I don't run, you know, hacking stuff or spam things or anything like that. But you know, where it's not hurting anybody else, where you're, you know, improving the quality of your website or of your country, with open source technology, you still come out with very different websites and very different, you know, every country could retain its identity, and it wouldn't be all one big homogenized thing with this giant squid sucking off the top of your prosperity, the cream of your crop, you know. I don't know. What, you got thoughts on this? You got more articles?
I know that you make dynamite websites. You make great websites, and
I'm addicted.
You know, with Sunweb Studios, right? Sunweb Studios, and I know there's much more that you could do with that.
Giving people voice. It's about giving people voice, and sharing knowledge and information. It's the most wonderful thing. I mean, I grew up with that, the internet, and when I realized the implication of the web and the internet when it first came out, I mean, it was like the Gutenberg press, just destined to change the world in a much better way, you know, sharing knowledge and growing, like, here we can Google up any scientist we want and get their take on stuff, and whether they're debating or not, we can compare their positions, you know. It's just a beautiful thing. And there's no reason that we couldn't do this with more technologies. It doesn't just have to be, you know, software, open source software. And, you know, I prefer, you know, OpenOffice and LibreOffice, and I think there's another one over, you know, like Microsoft Word, stuff like that, because I don't like proprietary code. It feels like a straitjacket. That's why I won't own an iPhone. It's because Apple is proprietary software, and Android is open source software. And even though I'm not programming in Android, I know that there's millions of Android programmers out there that are keeping an eye on each other. they'll know when the viruses are launched and stamp them out. You know, there's all kinds of antivirus stuff all in your WordPress sites and things like that. But if I were to run a proprietary site, I would have to be just paying the developer of the software forever and making, you know, trust him to keep the software free of malware. So anyway, that's just my thoughts on that. So everything was all open source,
you helped me a lot.
Get rid of the UA, you know?
Yeah.
So I am running out of time here. I need to get going, and thank you everybody for listening. I better double check that. No, my clock is wrong. I'm getting funny messages. Yeah, I'm getting funny. Okay, we've got a couple more minutes. I don't know.
Okay, so
I need
you found something else interesting. Suzanne, I found something else interesting from Voice in San Diego. I don't know why I'm stuck on San Diego tonight. Guess what? The California Coastal Commission in 2014 questioned why the U.S. Navy wasn't preparing for the worst case scenario of global warming. And what these idiots wanted the Navy to think about is, what if the sea rises 6.5 feet or something like that? Then the U.S. Navy's facilities in Coronado and San Diego are going to be mostly underwater. Well, the Navy is planning for maybe a 3-foot rise, but if it does rise 6 feet, they're going to move. They're going to basically shut down the naval base in San Diego, which is one of the biggest ones that's left in the whole country. And you see, what bothers me about it is that these commissars of global warming are influencing the U.S. Navy to possibly think about closing a Navy base, which would be cutting back on U.S. military might and versatility. And I think that's terrible. They have no idea where the sea level
would just move it inland
at all. Heard it?
Well, yeah, but they're not going to close that naval base unless it happens, right?
I guess not, but everybody's sort of assuming. You know how everybody was assuming that Clinton was going to win the election. Everybody just assumed it. They were laughing. Remember when they were laughing at Ann Coulter when she said she thought Donald Trump might win?
That's
everybody
terrible.
Laughed at it. Well, I guess right
I
now
wasn't
everybody's laughing.
Laughing
at the. Right now, everybody's laughing at the idea that the sea is not going to overflow into the cities.
No, but it's pretty obvious. Arizona used to be a seabed. You know, you can still find evidence of mm-hmm. seashells. In the
wow.
the ground of Arizona. So, you know, things the Earth does ebb and flow, and I think it
yeah.
has more to do with seismic activity than it has to do with temperature changes. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, the glaciers that come way far south and then recede again,
yeah.
and this urge to control everything is not wise on mankind's part, because your control might actually be a tyranny on somebody else. They're
yeah.
trying to force the Navy to make a decision, and the Navy just wants to cross that bridge when it comes to it. And you see that, you saw that in the political campaign. You have all these reporters trying to corner Trump into a corner as to what he would do in this situation and that situation. And he says, I'm not telling you now. And I know in some cases it's better to just not make that decision until the event happens and you see the landscape of what choices you have to make at the time. You can't foresee all
and
of that.
He's a wise
stuff.
General. He's not going to let anybody know his next move.
Right, and
he's got
wise generals. He has the endorsement of 200 admiral generals. And, he will assess the situation at the time. And so trying to forecast everything and impose politics or political governmental solutions on people in advance of a problem that hasn't mm-hmm. happened is extremely foolish, because then you're causing problems that might not have ever happened. Mm-hmm. One person's solution is another person's being oppressed. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
At least we can't have CERN for global warming or climate change or anything like that.
We don't
but I
know.
Think I think one of these days, I hope you take another look at CERN, because this earthquake that just happened in New Zealand is very close to the opposite point on the Earth from Geneva, Switzerland. It's within a couple hundred miles of it offshore there. And I think that's very suspicious that seabeds
yeah,
were raised, in some cases more than 10 feet. What the heck happened?
I know,
but
I've
not sure,
that
I'm not sure
if CERN
was active.
They found a way to weaponize
moment.
Earthquake. I'm sorry?
Yeah. But do you think, BP Earthwatch, BP Earthwatch has not come out yet and said that CERN was active during the time of that earthquake. I don't think that they have.
It might not have been. He does watch coronal mass ejections. And I guess there was one that hit the Earth and was involved in the New Zealand earthquake. But he has pointed out that CERN can induce coronal mass injections. And, it's the luck of the draw if they can get it to hit the Earth, because, both worlds are round.
It's a risky game.
So,
it's a very risky game. But, along with the lines of that maybe what they're doing at CERN caused an earthquake in Italy, which is along some kind of line
yeah.
that he...
Oh, he did say that. He did say that. And,
yeah.
And it
well,
came out...
why wouldn't it also...
CERN
why couldn't it also...
They issued an article refuting it. CERN had to issue an article refuting it, claiming, no, we're not causing earthquakes in Italy, even though we're doing all these high-powered experiments underground and are affecting the substructure of the rocks
exactly.
and all that stuff.
Now they'll have to print an article on why they did not cause the earthquake in New Zealand, which was 7.8? And it had some very unusual anomalies. It had bright lights that were seen in the heavens, right? Bright lights. I mean, my goodness, CERN is so powerful. Maybe the zap clear right across the Earth and caused it.
The Blog Talk Radio clock is not matching my computer clock. It's prompting me that I should be getting out of the way and letting Proof Negative come on. So I'm going to thank everybody for listening, and join us again next week, same time, same channel, on FreedomizerRadio.com.